listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plimer. Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
All right, welcome to episode 89 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plimer, and joining me today is Steve Anderson. Steve is the Director of Rugby for Rugby WA and recent author of a book titled A Coach's Journey, discussing essential aspects of professional coaching. He's held numerous roles worldwide with organisations such as Australian Rugby League, Scottish Rugby Union, Irish Rugby Union, and Rugby Australia. He is a level 4 coach in rugby union, a level 3 coach in rugby league, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show. So welcome, Steve.
Thanks very much, Andy.
Yeah, no worries. Good to chat. And, what's happening on the ground in WA with the current COVID situation? How have you guys adapted to that?
Actually, we're pretty fortunate here, Andy. The isolation lends itself to being adverse to things like COVID.
Yeah.
So we've got very minimal cases here.
Yeah.
The real issue we had was well documented in the media with, the leisure cruisers coming in and being parked at our ports at Fremantle.
Yeah.
And a lot of those were quite sick. But we're down to, I think the last record was 7 reported cases.
Right.
So our borders have been closed by the Premier, Mark McGowan, for about 3 months.
Right.
So we just went straight into lockdown, and obviously it's worked.
And what about sport? How's that affected things?
As a result of lockdown and isolation, sport was put on hold. Community sport's been back on the playing field 3 weeks.
Great.
We're up and running.
Yeah.
Junior, senior, and obviously our franchise, Western Force, is now in the bubble based in Newcastle. And they played their first game last
week. Yeah, so, my old hometown, Newey, so they couldn't be in a better area. So we'll touch on the Force later. Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right there back.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's awesome, and we'll dig into that in a little bit. But just going back on your playing backstory, what was your playing story like? A bit of rugby league, bit of rugby union.
Yeah, I grew up in central western Queensland.
Yeah,
and obviously sport was fairly dominant in later sort of pathway, but. Mostly league and cricket. I enjoyed athletics, of course. Different era then. Everyone had to participate.
Yeah. Not everyone got a medal.
No. Not everyone was a winner. But look, I was fortunate. I was quite athletic. I went right way through to, state sides with rugby league as in provincial teams. I left there to pursue rugby league professionally when I was 18, and was fortunate enough to play. This is all pre-NRL. Obviously, I'm an elderly person. I won't tell you how old, but this is pre-National Rugby League. But I played in the old Winfield Cup, as it was called, back in the 80s in Brisbane, and the two major comps in rugby league at that stage were Brisbane and Sydney, of course. So as a kid growing up in central Queensland, my aspiration was to play in the Brisbane Winfield Cup.
Right.
Which I achieved at two clubs, Brothers and Souths. So that's pretty much a very quick sort of detail on my playing career.
Yeah. And how'd the switch to union come about?
That's an interesting story, actually. And it didn't happen until quite late in my career as a professional coach. So I was one of the fortunate ones. I retired as a player at 27.
Right.
And I was coaching semi-professional league as a player as well. I was a player coach. So I was 25 years of age in my first semi-professional gig. You know, it was quite a daunting task.
Yeah.
Learning on the run, so to speak. But in those days, you didn't have sort of close mentors. You had you had guys that had sort of guided you. So I became a professional coach in rugby league and went the right the way through. You know, I coached at Gold Coast and then the Western Reds and Melbourne Storm. I was also the assistant coach with the Australian Kangaroos for 3 years.
Great.
And then a head coach. I did stints at Leeds in the UK, and then I did a head coach role at Warrington in the Super League. And then, fortuitous for me, I knew Ian McGeachan. And that's how I ended up in my journey with rugby union way back in end of 2002.
Wow. Not a bad contact to have in rugby.
Yeah, I think, well, Geach and Jimmy Telfer were the two head people of Scottish rugby at that time. Geach was the national coach and Jimmy was the director of rugby. And they were going through in Scottish rugby a fair bit of turmoil, so to speak, on and off the field. So they ushered in the position, you know, I come in as high performance manager.
Right.
I also did work at Glasgow Warriors, and I was a national defence coach for 2 years. A lot of my work was more about facilitation and mentoring. So even though I occupied coaching roles, I was trying to build depth in particular specialist roles.
Yeah.
And put a lot of long-term strategies around World Cup cycles in terms of the HP area. So it was an interesting transition from league, where I was fully hands-on, and to go into to rugby, rugby union. But I was supported quite well. You know, Jimmy looked after me quite well, and their tutoring was very direct too. Like, it was there was, first off, there was a respect in the fact that I was already an established professional coach in league, and then all they did was sort of familiarise me with, you know, what is rugby about, and what are the differences between rugby and league. Geach had a very good understanding of league. He grew up in Leeds, believe it or not.
Yeah, wow. That's a heartland.
Yes, mate, yeah, but he played all his rugby for Scotland, of course.
Yeah.
So I was sort of mentored by those two in particular. So I've been in union pretty much ever since.
Yeah.
17 years.
And what were some of those first experiences like in Scotland, and, you know, some of the comparisons that you noticed between rugby and league that kind of jumped out at you?
Look, at a... probably at a playing level, I noticed, you know, because I was hands-on at Glasgow Warriors for a season, which was great for my education in the game. Probably the tight five, in particular. They were the standout, both physically and also technically, different to league. League had already transitioned into virtually depowering the scrum at stage, and so the role of a loose head, tight head, a hooker, that had gone.
That
had completely gone out of league, which allowed them to remodel the physical attributes of the players. So, you know, if you look at the player in league today, they're just straight up and down, very big units, mobile units. They're all the same size. So, whereas in rugby, it was still, and this is one of the reasons why I love rugby, is because it's still got the positional specific aspect to its coaching. And as a coach, that's totally excites me. The tight five was the biggest area. I mean, tactically, probably the games are very similar. You know, it's all about winning the game line, winning a collision. And then it's like building your foundation for momentum so that then your backs can play off that gained momentum. Philosophically, they're fairly similar.
Yeah.
And league's a derivative of rugby union. It was born out of rugby union. So the essence of the game isn't that too dissimilar. The areas, if you go deeper into the tactics of the game, obviously in league you get a set of six.
Mm-hmm.
So the contest really isn't there at the breakdown, so to speak, at the tackle area.
Yeah.
Because you know you're going to get six.
Mm.
And now you can't even, in my day when I grew up, you could strike to the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
At the marker area.
Yeah.
But you can't do that anymore. But so that aspect's a bit different to the contest area. So in rugby, as you know, it's a contest at every breakdown.
Mm.
So that was the major one. And, of course, then putting that into the way I sold that as a coach at both provincial level and national level, it wasn't too difficult. I probably struggled more with the history of the game and the traditions of the game than the tactical and the technical component.
Yeah.
As I said, I love the fact in rugby that, you know, we have locks as an example.
Mm-hmm.
That's a specialised position.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
You know, and they're so crucial to your gameplay.
Mm.
Where league become very, they won't like me saying this, but it become very one-dimensional.
Yeah. No, I had Eddie Jones on the show recently, and he put it nicely, and I hadn't heard this term before. He said that, you know, that league is about continuity, whereas rugby union is about a contest. And, you know, the principles of player rugby is your first principle is you contest possession. And I thought that summed it up really well.
Yeah, look, I mean, very simplistic, and it is spot on.
Mm.
But, you know, if you want to debate that, for me, rugby's about continuity as well.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Ball in hand.
You build to it.
Everything we're trying to achieve in our game now at rugby and what's been challenged. In some of it's touching the fabric of the game, but it's still about continuity, ball in hand. We're trying to increase the amount of time they spend in attack and the amount of phases they have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very league as well. Like so I could see the games, if I looked at the game two decades ago between rugby and league, they're vastly different to today. Today is, you can see that there's a lot of similarities now.
Yeah, yeah.
And you hear a lot of the rule changes being twigged in rugby to match up what league were doing two decades ago, three decades ago.
Yeah.
I just hope they don't go too far with it because once you do that, well, we might as well just play one game.
Yeah, no, that's my hope as well. I think there's certain, just like the positional factors and certain laws around the game that I just don't think you can, you know, the scrum's a perfect example. We've got to have a scrum that's a contest in rugby union for mine.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, a set piece defines the game.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the difference between the two games, it defines the game.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
That's where the uniqueness comes from.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right. Well, you're with Rugby WA. You've been with them, we're talking off air that it's been a little while now in your second stint in WA. What's a description with your role at the moment with Rugby WA? And for those who aren't familiar with Western Australia, what's the rugby landscape look like in terms of the community game there and you know, academy and up?
Well, we've got obviously the Western Force have been here since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously with the academy and the pathway, it's all very very much in the fabric and the structure of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows that there's an academy. Everyone knows that there's a pathway.
Mm.
You know, under 15 state sides right through to under 19s, they all go away and they play in the national comp. We've got Super Women's. We've got an under 18 women's side. We've got an academy in the women as well. So that component's very well established.
Yeah.
If you look at community level, you know, as I mentioned to you off air, we've got about 7,000 participants running around.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Very, very, very vibrant rugby community. Very diverse in terms of we have a lot of expats and, you know, South Africans, mm-hmm. Irish, and it's really good. You go to a club, there's a lot of diversity there, and I suppose it probably adds to the game itself here. Being in WA, we compete against AFL, which is the dominant sport. Then you know close second is hockey. So hockey has their national academy based here.
Wow.
So it's very competitive.
Yeah.
We have a very, also very vibrant school system, like with rugby.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strong, not so much strong, but as I mentioned, we're competing against AFL and soccer, and they're quite dominant.
Mm.
But we do very, very well. It's got a history in the school's competition. It's quite long.
Mm-hmm.
It's been here for a long time. And our juniors, if you go back to, say, under sixes through the under 12 area, it's probably our largest base.
All right, great.
It's a game. So we've got a lot playing the game at that level. So it's not too dissimilar to any other rugby community. Very, very close-knit, very strong club community ideals around how we actually support one another. And they're fairly bonded.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much because of what happened to the Western Force at the back of 2017.
Yeah.
They sort of become a lot closer. So they're very strong, and as we mentioned now, the Western Force are back into the Super Rugby. It just adds, again, to the game itself.
Yeah.
Here in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's your day-to-day roles look like in your position as with Rugby WA?
Well, right now, I started this particular portfolio as Director of Rugby in March.
Mm-hmm.
So I transitioned out of a Rugby Australia Academy appointment.
Yep.
Where I was the Performance Director. And then right now I'm working on the remodelling of our whole program. So I've conducted a full internal SWOT on our programs,
mm-hmm.
The community, right the way through to, our academy level type programs that we're running, how we align and integrate between the Western Force and Rugby WA pathway. There's a transitioning that needs to happen. The remodelling also includes, new positions coming
mm-hmm.
online.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of support from Twiggy Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
He's mining magnets here, which is, fantastic. He kept the force going.
Yeah, 100%. And
set up Global Rabbit Rugby, which had a couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the support. The other major component of what I'm doing also is looking at the competition formats and the competition structures. So there's plenty to do.
Mm.
But certainly as Director of Rugby, I've got my finger in pretty much five different disciplines.
Yeah.
From schools right the way through to education and then into our academies.
Yeah.
So it's quite a broad role. But, obviously there's managers that sit underneath this role as well.
Yeah, yeah. And what would be some of your big goals around player and coach development moving forward that you're hoping to achieve?
Well, ironically, you've mentioned two key areas.
Yeah.
I've remodeled it to participation and pathway.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really simplistically put, you want to increase participation.
Yeah.
Under pathway, we want to be successful in our national tournaments,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Super Women's, you know, whether it's our under 15 state team. We want to be successful in that area. The coach education side of it is one of our biggest pieces that we've been working on for about 3 or 4 years here.
Right.
So if you want quality of service delivery, you need to have, well-informed and well-supported coaches.
Yeah, agree.
One of my national roles is on a I'm actually pulling apart as part of a panel the current High Performance Level 3 coaching accreditation for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's lost its, I suppose, had its place, but I think it's lost its direction a little bit,
mm-hmm.
In terms of what you get out of that level 3 accreditation.
Yeah.
And the other major part here is the accreditation program is being overhauled top to bottom.
Right.
So that's – but what we're doing to complement that here right now is that we've set up things like a coaching council. So all our clubs have the opportunity to either work in a junior council, which is underway at the moment, or the senior coaching council. Mm-hmm. So it's an opportunity for your coaches to meet in an informal setting and network. We have guest speakers. We talk about, the contemporary rugby. Talk about those areas of rugby that may be challenging in one club, they think's unique. Have a guess what? It's not. It's happening at other clubs.
Yeah.
And look, that's been in place for 3 years, and very successful. I've had many guys pulled on a lot of favours, but Rod Kafer, he launched the program for me.
Awesome.
Mick Burns, he's been over a couple of times. We've had Jake White present, Michael Checker.
Mm.
So I've been able to tap into that as well. But I think we need to continue with professional development, as it's called, PD.
Mm.
Once you get out of the accreditation program, that's not the end.
No, I agree.
Sadly, I think we've hung our hat on the accreditation program. And that's the be-all, that's the answer.
Yeah.
So all I've done is formalised, a process that complements the accreditation. What's not in the coaching manual?
Yeah.
We'll come along to the coaching council, we'll all have a chat and we'll talk, we'll talk rugby.
Yeah.
And talk about the common issues and talk about, even strategies and tactics are being discussed in that room.
Yeah.
And that serves as a PD for those coaches.
Yeah, I think informal PD is incredibly powerful because the coaches who are involved in it, there's an intrinsic motivation for them to be there, so they're going to be way more open and to sharing ideas and receiving ideas, and it builds community, builds trust. I think it's a hugely important piece to coach development.
Well, I think, I've always said this about coaching. I actually brought it up in one of the council meetings. There is nothing unique about what you're doing.
Mm.
If you think you're doing something that's new, I'm sorry. It's all been done before.
Yeah.
The game's 150 years old. I said, what we do today is it's just that we package it differently.
Mm-hmm.
We're more deliberate about how we actually resource our program. We're more deliberate about how we go about mentoring the individual player and the team.
Mm.
We're more deliberate about how we actually go about, preparing the season as distinct from, yesteryear.
Mm.
It's a little bit more informal. We've just formalised stuff. But it was all there. Everything was there.
But yeah.
So breaking down the barriers, as you mentioned, was critical as well.
Mm.
Unique feeling that every coach has, I think, is more born out of insecurity of their knowledge or mm-hmm. lack of.
Mm-hmm.
Or am I doing it right? Questioning, second-guessing themselves.
Yeah.
Am I doing this right? So getting them all in the room has actually broken down some of those barriers. Like, because they're finding out that it's a typical issue or problem or concern to be wondering, you know, am I doing it right? Mm. So the room itself, as in a coaching council, you're right, it's broken down barriers.
Yeah.
They're more outgoing in their thinking, and they're more understanding to, I suppose, developing their own way of delivering as a coach. Everything I talk about, Andy's about, you know, methodology and delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not us to them, as in the play. It's more about how the player, what the player wants. So we've got to be adaptable. We've got to actually understand that we're in servicing their needs. It's not 100%. The other way around.
Yeah.
And it's not. And I see this a lot where coaches will leave groups totally confused. They'll just, you know, you look around the room and you go, well, only about six guys got what you're talking about.
Mm.
But they're actually doing it on purpose, because they're taking it. They're taking a podium and they're trying to sell how good they are.
Mm.
Like, and look at the depth of knowledge I have. You know, and that's not what it's about. So to me, coaching's about understanding your environment and those within, and then being adaptable and diverse enough to be able to communicate at a level that the most, I don't want to be derogatory here, but those that are least experienced in your group, as mm-hmm. you're playing, actually understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're not coaching the few that are smart enough. You've got to be able to coach at a level that everyone in your group understands. I think that's one of our biggest issues in coaching at the moment.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's where... Yeah, you go.
I was just saying, we're not cognizant of the fact that we have, you know, varying levels of intellect, game mm-hmm. intellect.
Mm-hmm.
We have varying levels of maturity.
Yeah.
You have the introverts, the extroverts, and all the diversity within those two particular areas.
Yeah.
You've got to be cognizant of that. So, you know, like we... You know, do we call it teaching? Well, yeah, thereabouts. But at the same time, I think as a coach, I think if we overlook that fact that we've got a diverse group sitting in front of us, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I was just about to say that's one of the huge benefits I've found of being a teacher and then going into coaching, that I've, you know, you already have experience with that in the classroom. So it's not something that's foreign to you.
But I mentioned to you before, Andy, like the GPS system, and it's a good segue to this, because
mm-hmm.
they overcoach, mate.
Yeah.
You know, it's a broad statement, but as I mentioned off there, the reason why we don't have tens is because we're prescriptive, prescriptive in schools. And when we get them into the academy and we want them to make decisions, you know, because you're making decisions on the run in the game, you know, so... If we're not allowing that particular individual to develop that skill of making decisions on the run and
and making energy, mistakes,
bingo.
Yeah,
it's okay to you know, to make a mistake. It's okay.
Yeah,
because that's how you learn.
Yeah.
But look, again, you know, I'm not being, I don't want to sound derogatory of school teachers in rugby, but the overcoaching has to stop.
Mm.
Got to stop it. It's not about you. And you know, I've been focusing on unstructured, or what we used to call in rugby league, chaos rugby.
Yeah.
You know, for 20 years.
No, I love it. I think that's why I am such a big fan of coaching to the principles of play, rather than a structure or a pattern or anything like that. If we're not contesting for possession, if we're not going forward, if we don't have support, your pattern or your attack structure is useless.
Correct. you know, I mean, it's the simplicity of strategy and tactic to me is has always been a default.
Mm.
When you're in the shit, you've got something to fall back on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that's done through your preseason. That's how you teach the different layers of your offense and your defense strategy. You know, what I'm finding is too many coaches rely on the plan, and they if the player doesn't deliver the plan, they're at fault.
Mm.
Well, there's too many variables in a game from week to week.
No, 100%.
To deliver a set play. You know, and this is where I really get annoyed, where we've gone away from the basic fundamental of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The basic fundamentals are run, pass, tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're spending 95% of your game in phase offense or phase D. So by default, your coaching session should mirror that.
Yeah.
Your set piece, specialist area. But, you know, they're in isolation. You know, you don't do set piece, and I've seen it, and coaching set piece in an actual team session, and you got half your team standing around.
It's great for a winter sport.
Really? Like, really? But, you know, there's no secret around what we're talking about, and I'm sure it's been discussed a million times before.
Mm.
But actually delivering as a coach that very what I just said around unstructured or chaos rugby, like, because that's the game. It's a collision sport. It's not pretty.
Mm.
It can be in moments, but generally it's a collision sport, so it's a contest, so it's not going to look that pretty.
Mm.
So your sessions in training have to mirror that. You have to play as much. And a lot of coaches always talk about, well, you know, you're in season, what's that look like?
Mm.
I said, look, it's like you just need to switch them on.
Mm.
So you need to be doing 10 to 12 minutes minimum. You know, they wanted the actual minutes, you know. Mm. That's all. You know, 10 to 12 minutes switches on the players in full contact. If you're not, you don't have to do an hour and 20.
No.
It's 10 to 12 each session.
Yeah.
You might start with it and finish with it. This is in season. But,
yeah.
But I said it's incredibly important for decision-making. Now, if you don't play live,
yeah,
you can't turn it on like a tap.
Yeah.
And they wonder why, you know, the game goes to shit in game time.
Mm.
We're doing all week unopposed, and then they expect them to turn the tap on and play opposed.
Yeah.
And come with the exact timing, the exact positioning. Like, seriously? So I struggle with that aspect. I struggle with it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the leaguey in me, but it's never been that difficult to understand the game, but also the relationship between how you train and perform in training has a direct correlation to your performance in game.
Yeah.
So, as I said, by default, you should be doing something similar.
Yeah. No, I agree. And, there's some great points there. And I think, on reflection, coaches, you know, should be reflecting on each session and thinking about that and trying to link it to the game. There are two sessions that week and the game that weekend and reflecting on that process and whether there was a correlation in performance as well. I think that's really, really important.
Well, if you're in business, that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, agree.
Yeah. I think coaching, again, I'm not having a shot, but coaches, if they think player, it's about the player,
mm-hmm.
your preparation and planning will never fail.
Yeah.
As distinct from, I'm going to write a plan, and in that plan I'm going to have strategies, I'm going to have tactics, and they have to learn it. So it's like fitting a round peg in a square. It doesn't work.
Mm.
So, you know, there needs to be a mutual understanding between the player and the coach that it's a team, it's a combined effort.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a lot more of it today, where the you know, particularly at pro level, you've got senior players, you know,
holding court. Yeah.
But, you know, where does that start? it starts as young as it allows your group. So if you've got a 12, 13-year-old that's quite a mature kid, there's nothing wrong with developing his leadership.
No, no way. Yeah, for sure.
It's your job to identify that and then to support that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've become very macro in our thinking as coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned the word adaptability before.
Yeah.
You know, your skill set as a coach is to adapt to your environment. You have to recognise that there are individuals in your group that are at varying levels, both in game sense, both in skill, both in positional and understanding. So you've got to be able to recognise that, and then you've got to adapt your programming around that.
Yeah, no, agree.
Too many coaches, I think, carry a blueprint, and they try and superimpose it. It don't fit.
No, no, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. Continuing on the coach Ed pathway there. Over the lockdown period, Rugby WA produced some awesome webinars. What was, I suppose, Coach Ed was the driving reason for that, but and also what were some of the reoccurring themes that came out of those presentations?
Yeah, look, I've got to thank, I drew a lot of favours on Gary Gull, Phil Davies. I mean, they're fantastic.
Yeah, some good groups.
Highly credentialed coaches, and personal friends. And as I said, I drew on a lot of favours. But I think for me, the lockdown forced us into this mode of communication anyway.
Yeah.
using the webinars. And we had a group of 18 level 3 coaches going through our program and at the time, and that's where it stemmed from. You know, how do we insert and continue on with our coaching of the level 3 applicants. And I think the common thread, when I come up with the six different topics, what I was trying to expose the coaches to was the diversity of mindset around the coaching. A little bit about what I was talking about just previously with you, Andy. Like, if you look at all those coaches individually, they learnt how to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one way fits. You have to be aware that there's a structure and a framework that underpins your coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Critical aspect of it is how do we adapt to the current group that we have. And if you look at all those coaches, the underlying theme for me that come out of all of those coaches that we had, the David Waits from League even, was the simplicity of coaching, even at the elite level, and it was all based on communication and being simplistic with the way you communicate. Don't be too complex. So things like, you know, Phil Davies delivered one on, Gary did one on analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember it, but a lot of information, but the message was very clear. That was for him. It wasn't for all the players.
Yeah.
He released information to the players as needed and as required.
Yeah.
He didn't dump the information on them.
Yeah.
So his analysis as a coach and as a coaching team is completely different to how you disperse that information. And that was one of the themes that we spoke to our coaches about post Gary's presentation.
Mm.
Critical aspect. So, you know, you can do all the analysis you want, but that doesn't mean you go out and you dump it all on the player.
Mm.
It has to have context. It has to have relevance. It has to have a development aspect to that individual when he receives that information.
Mm.
It's got to be usable straight away, in training, in his prep, and inside the game. So you've then got to, once you get, collate all the information, you then have to decipher. That's the missing piece with most coaches, that they'll rely on that information. And I was guilty of that. Mm-hmm. Early on, when I was in one of my first professional appointments, I was 30 years of age, in the old Winfield Cup, which is now the NRL.
Yeah.
And I was totally reliant on this information because I was insecure about how they were perceiving me.
Mm.
So I wanted to come across as this technical geek that had all had all this information. to be smart. Well, this is in reflection too, but
yeah.
So, because I thought that was right at the time.
Mm.
At 30 years of age, I'm a pro coach. I'm going, I just finished playing, and I'm going, what's this all about? You know, what's this what's this gig about? You know, but and I learned, you know, to manage the information and disperse the information with relevance, and that took time. But the more I gained confidence as a coach and what I could offer in the wider aspect of coaching to the playing group, the more confident I got with how do I transfer this information I've got. And I think Gary Gold hit on that repeatedly through that presentation. And I thought that, for me, that resonated with the whole program.
Yeah.
Communication, how you communicate is key. And it doesn't matter whether it's analysis, whether it's tactical, whether it's, you know, in preparation and training, whether it's a pre-start meeting for training,
mm-hmm.
your comms are critical. So you can have all the detail you like in the room with your coaching staff, but then you've got to pull out what's relevant as a when you go to your playing group. So I think Gary's was exceptional in terms of here's the analysis, but here's what I used to give to the players.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah, that's awesome. And I'll put the link to the webinars in the show notes as well, so listeners can go and check some of those episodes out. There's some beauties in there. So I think there's some, you know, hours of learning for coaches there. You touched on it a couple of times. Obviously, the excitement must be massive in WA, but the force is back. How important is that reinstatement for the long-term success of rugby in WA, and how is that taken within the rugby community?
Obviously, everyone's excited.
Yeah.
It's just a shame we can't see them play
at
the moment live, you know. But it's exciting. As I said, the clubs are sort of very reinvigorated because they got their franchise back, so to speak.
Yeah.
Even though they haven't gone away, you know, the pinnacle was to get back into Super Rugby. So very excited, you know, community-wise. I think for, you know, if I looked at inside the Western Force and its impact on, say, the pathway.
Yeah.
I mentioned off air, you know, we've lost a lot of players over the last few years from our academy. Not really lost. They're still in the Rugby Australia system.
Mm-hmm.
But they're preferring to move to franchises that were Super Rugby. And, of course, Western Force weren't.
Mm.
But if you look inside the current Western Force, there's a lot of ex-academy players actually in there, local players, born, bred, come through the pathway and that are now playing for Western Force. So from a club perspective, you know, that's incredibly important for the aspiring player to look at, you know, a Tom Sheminit who was running around at Nedlands 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Now he's packing thumbs.
That's amazing. It's really
cool. Yeah. Ollie Callan, who was running around at Wanneroo last year, was on the bench for the franchise last week.
Yeah.
So, you know, incredibly important for community rugby to see that there's an actual step process to get to a franchise that's competing in a Super Rugby competition. So incredibly important for the game in WA.
Yeah. No, I know. You know, I watched the game. I was, you know, they had a cracking first half, and I think the more rugby, the better. You know, just adapting to the speed of the game. You know, the last 20 minutes, it'll come good in the next round or two.
Well, the last 2 years with global rabid rugby, which is what they're playing.
Yeah.
You know, they did a lot of modification with the rules. I don't know if they tampered with the rules.
Yeah, I did see some of them, yeah.
And one of them was they only played 35-minute halves.
Right.
So you've hit on a good point. I think that we always sort of knew, we had discussions, you know, internally. It was always going to be that last 20.
Mm.
And we, you know, because they're all of a sudden playing 80 minutes of footy again. Two periods of footy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't matter what you do off the field in training. It's always about match fitness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're dead right. Give them a few more games and they'll be back. Because, you know, obviously they competed very well in that first half.
Yeah.
And it just showed where they were at, you know. Timmy Sampson and Matt Hodgson have put together a very, very good squad.
Mm-hmm.
There's some. They've brought in experience, of course, just to get them through this first period.
Yeah.
There's a couple of older guys that they've included, which is probably important for, you know, not only to compete, but there's a lot of young guys in the squad. So they're going to benefit from those experienced guys coming back in.
Yeah. Who was the fullback? I liked him.
McGregor.
Is McGregor? McGregor.
Jack McGregor.
Yeah, that was him. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Very good. I thought he had a solid game. I thought he was excellent. Yeah.
He plays up in the line too. He plays a lot of 10.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You go back through Global Rabbit Rugby, he played in the line a bit.
Yeah.
And then he moved back when they brought in Isaac Fiennes.
Okay.
He's moved on as well. But yeah, very good, talented attacking player.
Yeah.
Good kicking. Very good.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked Rocky. There's some good players in that group for sure. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, you've recently written a book titled A Coach's Journey, discussing essential aspects of professional coaching. What was the driving reason to put it all on paper and get it together?
Really, really simple, Andy. It's just I had it in the back of my head probably 5 or 6 years ago to do it.
Yeah.
And I've got a series of books coming out. It's not just that's the first. I think when you accumulate information and knowledge and experience, you just want to share some of those areas, and that's pretty much the driving force. I just want to share where I've been, and if you look inside the book, there's at the end of each chapter lessons.
Okay.
What did I learn? Yeah, and I'm just hoping that, you know, if an aspiring coach picks the book up, I'm not saying that's going to fast tracking, but I wanted to give a real picture in a summary. It's only 200 pages, but of what some of those, I suppose, areas that you're going to come in contact with as a coach that aren't in your accreditation manuals. And as you know, Andy, there's plenty.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know, like there's a classic one in there about dealing with conflict. You know, and you're probably thinking, well, you know, why write about that? Well, it's a major part of
it's whether huge.
It's on or off. It's massive. You know, like, you know, I look at some of the coaches in we're just talking about the NRL, you know, I've got mates going through, you know, a lot of issues. With boards, with managers. You know, one's just been stood down, you know, 10 rounds into the year. So conflict, you know, manifests in a whole host of ways. But I talk a lot about how the coaching team work in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've always encouraged is debate. You know, you've got to debate, but it's how you actually manage the debate environment that lends itself to being conducive to performance. So if you don't manage that as the head coach, you can get out of hand, of course, end up in arguments. And, of course, when that simmers, a whole host of things occur. But so that, you know, little flagposts, I suppose, for coaches, like, as I mentioned, aspiring coaches, would pick the book up and hopefully look at some of those lessons and go, oh, God. Now, I didn't want to scare them, but, you know, There's other good parts in there, like coaching elite. That was for me, that's the greatest reward for a coach, being able to work with an elite athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about you know, just rewards. No, I talk about the fact that I earned the right to get there. I went through a lot of pain and went through a lot of turmoil, and it's not an easy ride to get to that position. Some guys get in there earlier, but I was fortunate. I got in there early, Andy. I was 30.
Mm.
I was nowhere near ready.
Yeah.
So the other part inside the book is about patience. You know, I stress that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a big one.
And accepting that you're not the finished article,
mm-hmm.
just because you've got a position. You're forever learning.
Yeah.
And you take learnings and lessons from everyone in your environment. Keep your eyes open, your ears open, absorb, and, you know, take in as much as you can. So all those little messages are inbuilt. But it was really simple. As I said, I've got a series of books that I'm going to write, but this one was more of a snapshot, a summary, I suppose, of where I've been. Not everywhere, but it's I've picked a theme, and then I've selected a particular environment I'd coached in.
Right.
Pulled that out and used examples from there. So it's real. It's actually real.
Yeah, that's great, and I think that makes it even more useful. And you know, I was just looking through the index, and you touched on a couple areas that I was interested in. One of them was building a performance profile. What do you touch on there when you're talking about that?
Well, you know, I'm not a nerd, but I just think understanding the individual is absolutely key. So I touch on, when I talk to an individual, I talk about the greater environment for him. What is his environment? I need to know, if I'm going to profile a player, it's not just how he run passes and tackles.
Yeah.
You need to know, like, you know, where's he been, what's he done?
Yeah.
I want to get to know that person. I want to actually understand the individual so I can help to deliver a better skilled player. And I don't understand why people don't understand the relationship that needs to occur.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk profiling, you need to understand the person before you can understand the athlete.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why people balk at that. Mm. So obviously my background is psychology too, Andy. So
yeah.
I've always had an inkling or an inclination to actually want to get to know and understand relationship. How do we improve the relationship between player-coach? You know, and as I said, if you want to build a profile, it's not exclusively about just the rugby. It has to overlap. Yeah. You know, you need to look at all the different peripheral areas. And some players, and I'm not talking about the intimate detail. I'm talking about, you know, the psychology of the player. You know, where's he sit? Where's his personality sit?
Mm.
You know, how I talk to one player can be completely different to another player.
Yeah. Selection as well.
Oh, that's a massive one.
Yeah.
Yeah, how does he handle being deselected?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know,
it wasn't my strong point, I can tell you that.
Well, mate, I went from being dropped from first grade to third grade in a five minute discussion with a coach. And he appears at the front of the book.
Didn't go well.
Didn't go well, and the lesson learnt was shut your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, just suck it up, boy.
Yeah, I wish I'd had someone tell me that too.
Oh, well, yeah, like we all learn.
Yeah, no, yeah. Agree. No, that's cool. And the other one that jumped out at me too was you talk about the downside of elite coaching. Can you expand a little bit about that?
Probably the hardship that goes with coaching, like the emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in it in terms of, I mean, as I mentioned, it's a summary in my book of what occurs in the chapters, but within those environments. But if you read between the lines, it's a tough gig coaching.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, you mentioned one about selection. I mean, one of the hardest parts is to actually, you know, tell a guy that he's not in the squad.
Yeah, agree.
You know, and particularly when he's been working for weeks on trying to get back into form.
Mm.
It just hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And you've got to say, well, sorry, mate, we've got to move on.
Yeah.
That's a hard one. But certainly the, you know, I talk about things like, you know, professionalism, you know, boardroom politics,
mm-hmm.
Media,
mm.
Downside of coach, you, media. Not a fan, right? Not a fan. I am not a fan.
I don't think you're the only coach in that area.
Well, I can never work out why they think they are or how they think they are the conscience of the game.
Mm. Yeah.
What gave them the right to be, you know, all things about the game?
Mm.
You know, it happens across all sports. You know, I've got some good mates in the media, but I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I find them. I do talk about the media as being both needed, but also it's got to be mutual in terms of benefit.
Yeah.
It can't be all one way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I fell out in one position because the media took a disdain on a particular person in the media, took a disdain to my protection of my playing group. Well, sorry, mate.
Yeah.
What gives you the right, you know, to come in from the outside to look in? You know, have you earned the right to be here?
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit old-fashioned in that respect, like in terms of the values that I hold close. And, you know, mine's what sits high for me is respect, and you earn that.
Yeah.
Integrity. So when a media guy goes to town on an individual without any knowledge, you know, just writes stuff so that they get a bite.
Yeah.
I find that really disappointing. Like, I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. So I've had a lot of issues. Not a lot. I've had issues with media.
Well,
as you said, we all do.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a cracking yarn, this book, and I'll put the link in the show notes as well. I know it's you know, it's up on Kindle. It's paperback as well. So for coaches who are keen to keep reading and keep growing, it should be on the wish list. So I'll put it in the show notes, like I said. We always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were first exposed to rugby league, rugby union, who was one of the first players that you really looked up to and respected?
Steve Rogers. Oh, sorry, Jeff Richardson.
Yeah. Yeah, so dual Jeff, international, yep. I think.
Dual international.
Yeah.
So Steve was a very close second. Yeah. He was one of my idols, but certainly Jeff. You know, he was a 5'8". He was one of the best.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And what about now? Who are some of the players going around that you like what they're doing?
Well, I don't have a favourite.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still locked into the Dan Carter. I can't get past Dan.
Might be time to move on.
Even going back a little bit further, Carlos Spencer.
Yeah, yeah.
They're awesome. Incredibly gifted players. You know, at the moment, you know, I used to, in Genia's early career,
mm-hmm.
I enjoyed watching him.
Yeah, agree.
As a halfback. Today I'm sort of a bit more liberal.
Yeah.
Look around. Yeah, I'm not sort of focusing on any one player.
Yeah.
I'm still stuck in the eye.
It's all good. It's all good. Third question, what about coaches who are some high profile coaches that you look up to and respect how they do things?
Oh, probably guys that I've worked with mainly. You know, I had them on the webinar series. Yeah. You know, David Waite from Rugby League. I mean, I've met Eddie.
Yeah.
Eddie actually tried to recruit me when he was at the Queensland Reds.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Going way back.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, I'm a fan of Brendan Benter.
Yeah.
And Gary Gold. Obviously, I've worked with both those as a consultant when they were at London Irish many years ago. But, I mean, they bring to the table not only their technical nous, but also, you know, their energy. They're very energetic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I loved about Brendan.
Yeah, cool. And last question, what about a coach in the grassroots who doesn't have the profile of Brendan Venter, but's doing excellent work and deserves some recognition?
Probably that's a good question, actually, because, coaches that are in community and pathway, they often get overlooked.
Yeah.
For these roles.
Yeah.
There's a couple local. There's a guy here called Jack Lloyd, head director of rugby at Palmara.
Right.
He's been floating around in Sydney and Brisbane comp. But they're the sorts of guys that have, you know, put in over numerous years.
Mm.
Jack in his 40s now, but get overlooked for these professional gigs. He's
been
a fairly good gig where he is as director of rugby, but he's always aspired next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's one in community that I'd recommend up.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's a great recognition there of his work, and great way to wrap things up. All right, Steve, well, it's been awesome having a chat to you about rugby in WA. I'm really excited about the Force being back, and no doubt the rugby community's pretty pumped to have their team back where it's meant to be, where it should have always been. I've always been a fan, so it's been great chatting with you, and look forward to hearing more about rugby in WA in the future.
Thanks for having me, Andy. Much appreciated.
No worries. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us via Twitter at RugbyCoachesCNR or via the website therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.